jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip, hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance for us to talk about the news of the week or other things that we think are going to be interesting with a couple of friends here in studio with me. In this case, I've got Jonathan Owens, a many-time participant. I appreciate you coming back in, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Always good to have you. Scott Salas, who is a principal at Dalrymple Salas. He's an architect by trade and a really great guy and a friend. And also, this is your second time, I think, on the wrap.
Glad to be back. Thanks.
Very good. Just one politics thing. I'm not going to do too much politics today, which ought to be a little bit different. But the District 4 vacancy. We've been talking about this today. The county commission pushed on the beach lighting ordinance because there's no D4 representative. They pushed on the boat ramp ordinance because there's no D4 representative. Not being able to do the business because you don't have a representative to me is a problem. Doing business without a representative is as much a problem because you have people making decisions about things without input from the relevant district. You got the folks in Finley Drive and JoJo. Those folks are trying to stop something from happening in their backyard that they don't have a representative on the board. You know, we just had a sort of forum with the District 4 candidates with them, and, you know, they don't have somebody that can speak for them. I will just, before we get to questions for you guys, I just yesterday got the list from the governor's office of the applicants. Mayling Davis, Gregory Hodges, Ashley Hoffberger, Stan Daniels, Buck Sexton, he's a radio host, Buck Mitchell. It's funny because they kept calling him Buck Lee in the forum. Gene Valentino kept calling him Buck Lee, which was funny. Jared Moore, Chase Romagnano, Boyce White, and Walker Wilson and Brian Wire are the people who have applied for the job. So that's finally we got after 4 months of asking, we finally got the list, or 3 months of asking, so that's good. But does it matter that much, Jonathan?
This close to the election, I don't think it does. You're 90 days away from the primary, right?
Right.
Who's going to make the decision on who is actually going to sit in that seat for the next 4 years?
August 20?
Yeah, 20.
20 or
August
21,
20? Yeah,
I
August 20,
I think it's 20,
actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, you know, do you put somebody in there for them to get their feet wet and then that not be the elected person that's coming
right
in?
Because the learning curve is so big.
Right. I mean, I was there with, you know, Doug for 8 years, and for the first, you know, 120 days, you're, you know, trying to figure out where the bathrooms and the exits are. I mean, much less making policy or decisions on policy that affect the entire county, right? Because you're one vote to affect everything in the whole county. So I think at this point we just wait and just let the people decide who's going to be their representative for District 4.
We went through this before after Elvin McCorver died, and it was like 10 months to get somebody on ECUA. And I thought, that's ridiculous. The governor just appointed somebody 1 month after there was a death in the county. But some counties are not Escambia County with our politics and our difference of opinion and our who's backing which candidate and all of that kind of stuff.
We've got 15 minutes, man. We can't talk about all the reasons for all that. So let's move on and let's talk about some fun stuff.
Scott, you live in District 4?
Yeah.
Does it bother you?
No, I tend to agree. I think 90 days is hard for government to accomplish anything. And I'm really excited about the incredibly long list of people running. And there's probably 6 or 7 people on that list that are friends or acquaintances of mine. And I support all of them. And I tend to believe that, and I may be wrong, this is my personal opinion, my little bias, but if somebody was appointed, voters tend to believe they have an edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like this, even 90 days, no big deal. Let's tap into this plethora of people who really want to serve their community. It's been a long time that I can think of any office where people of that caliber have lined up in such a long line, so I'm excited about that.
I will say this, at this point, to your point, Jonathan, at this point, I could see the governor waiting until the primary and then appointing the winner of the Republican
the winner
primary.
Of the race, right.
Yeah, because obviously they're going to, we assume, would be winning the general election, but also for political purposes, you know, they'd be running against Ed Helms, the Democrat in the case. To other matters, we bike all over the place, and we see a lot of different ways of doing things, right? We see a lot of different ways of doing subdivisions. We see a lot of different ways of doing sidewalks and parks and just all of it. And one of the things that caught my attention is in Baldwin County, they do not have a requirement that your retention ponds have fences around them. And we do. And our retention puns are horribly, beastly, awful, ugly, disgusting eyesores. And in Baldwin County, most of the time, their retention puns are either just there or their amenities, their features. They put fountains in their retention ponds. They build subdivisions around their retention ponds. They're centerpieces of their new developments. Scott, why? Why do we have to have ugly, horrible chain link fence?
Yeah. Well, I love the question. Retention ponds are a little more complicated than people want to make them. They seemingly just dig a hole and make it beautiful. But what is called in the business wet ponds, like Admiral Mason Park and countless others that always have water in them and can aerate and have fountains, those are, of course, more expensive. But they're also hard to come by, and there are many situations where the soil conditions or just the elevation, you know, this, the condition of the site, physically can't have a wet pond.
Interesting.
And I'm not so sure. I would have to talk to all of my civil engineers, but I'm not so sure we've changed the rules locally about fencing retention ponds. I can, and I'm in full agreement with you. I hate fencing, and I hope we can find a way around it.
In some subdivisions, they've turned them into, like, canal systems.
Yeah.
So everybody's got water. It's kind of cool.
In the past, the fence was required when the slope was so severe. And that,
like a risk of a fall?
Kids falling in
sure.
It. Doesn't make me a fan of the rule by any means, but... And sadly, that's a result of, well, I don't have enough land, and so I have to comply with these rain regulations. Oh, and guess what? We just had a flood, so now they've increased the requirement.
From 25
so
to 100.
So the only way that I can put the building I need and meet my parking requirements they're making me abide in is to dig a hole to China.
Yeah.
And that can kind of become a little dangerous. And so,
like we're seeing behind like West Florida Hospital right now, for example.
The quick governmental solution is like fence it up, we're good.
Yeah.
So, but I'm all in. I would love much more conversations. And I could say, I'm not so sure that is in place still. The requirement for chain link on all ponds, I'm not so sure is the case. And I hope it to be. And there's many solutions of typically. Unless you're in that scenario, it's like we just don't have any land. And you can resolve retention in many ways. It's always everything that's not the scary pond with a fence, of course, costs more. And that's why you can bury retention. You can put it under a parking lot, and that's very costly. But that's kind of the big picture of it.
We'll come back to this in just a second. We'll do a quick traffic break. Jimmy's got traffic on the fives.
If you're coming into Pensacola from Gulf Breeze or Navarre, you can expect to see a little bit of traffic building up from Avalon Boulevard all the way to the Naval Live Oaks Nature Preserve, but clearing up as you approach the 3 Mile Bridge and clear over the bridge into town. And Pace and Milton, seeing some slowdowns on the US 90 bridge this morning, but clearing up as you get into Pensacola. If you see anything else on the road, please call or text our traffic tip line, 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Somebody also texted and said that a lot of the retention ponds in Escambia County were afterthoughts. They weren't original design, whereas in Baldwin County, they're building the subdivisions around the water features, which means that they can design for them. Maybe have the lower angle slope, like you were talking about, so they're less of a hazard, potentially.
I'll quickly say the best thing government can do about retention ponds is allow us to share them. Because right now, the code's like, your
keep
property,
all the water on your property.
Yes. And Admiral Mason Park is a perfect example of how they allowed it's shared, basically.
Multiple different subdivisions or communities might pour in there.
It meets the requirements for required retention for all the land from the water to the Waffle House and the Tech Park. And we need much more solutions like that.
And by the way, I also love your distinction about wet versus dry, you know, and whether that really works. Jonathan, you were, you know, in District 2 back in the day, you dealt with a lot of flooding issues. Your thoughts about, I mean, I see it from a beautification standpoint. I just, when we ride around, I think, man, that's cool. I like it. And when I ride around here, I think a lot, that's not so cool. I don't like it.
Yeah. Chandelle subdivisions, fine example
of
a retention pond, which they call the lakes of Chandelle or even Lake Charlene. I mean, that was a clay pit before it got developed into a neighborhood. There's no fences around that. Mm-hmm. There's houses around that. So, I mean, that design even goes back into the, you know, 90s and 2000s where the fences weren't required around the what's a hole in the ground, as Scott and I are familiar with. I could think of a terrible retention pond. It's right off of off Gulf Beach Highway at the auto parts store. I mean, it's literally seawall.
Yeah.
You know, with a fence around it. And if you go look inside of it, it's overgrown, not maintained, and it's full of trash.
And they're usually, those ones, that my experience, those ones are usually dry.
Right. Yeah,
they're usually dry. It's the ones typically you see them by a restaurant has built where they've had to have it, or you know they're trying to fit it into a space. I think of the one by the church on Palafox, Old Palafox. That all of those where they're certainly not an amenity. Also, probably something you ought to have a fence around because of the vertical wall. Right.
Right. Right.
It's also problematic because they are all again designed independently.
Right. Because there's no shared access to it.
You've got a property. You've got a development. We're going to put a building on. I got to meet them. It's time to do retention, and you take care of it only within your property. And there is no requirement for the engineer to say, well, but what about all the surrounding property? Is it higher than mine and it going to dump water, even though they're not supposed to, but is it in reality going to put water here? So you can fully design a retention pond in complete compliance with the code
and it not work.
Problematic.
Right.
At the same time, you can do the same and it never have a drop in it.
Mm-hmm. But you had to follow the rule.
On your property.
Right.
So to have a more collective design criteria for retention ponds and, of course, and then, like I said earlier, share them, it's really something I think I would love to see the powers that be allow.
I think the reason why I was successful with Admiral Mason Park, which you were talking about, is because it's inside a municipality, right? I mean, you're inside the city of Pensacola, and that decision was made to, hey, you need to have a comprehensive stormwater plan. Escambia County does not have that. And we have Escambia County has such a diverse, soils here. It's not easy and it's not sexy, right? It's not something that people want to like talk about. Oh, great. We're building a new park, those types of things. It's just the minutiae of what government should be kind of regulating. It's not exciting, but I agree with you. It's something that needs to be done here in Escambia County, as Santa Rosa as well, all along the panhandle here.
And when it's done well, when like all those little, dumb, never going to make a headline in the newspaper kind of things are done well, it collectively creates a really nice place to live.
Quality of place.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, I'll give you just another dumb little example. The drain covers, the manhole covers in Baldwin County, for the most part, are all decorative.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
New Orleans.
You know,
New
if you're
Orleans,
driving like in your car, Nazi you don't ones, notice. Yeah. But if you're on the street, you see, oh, there's a ship on that one or there's a tree on that one. It's not just
storm sewer.
You know, like, and to me, that's kind of. And granted, they're a newer community, okay, so they can, you know, they can do stuff that maybe, in a sense, Pensacola is too old to have done right the first time or the third time or the 15th time. But to me, that's what I notice is a lot of attention to little details. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of, it's one of my favorite stories is the apple farmer gets his two boys out there and he gives them the giant pile of apples and he says, I want you to sort the apples in the small ones and the big ones. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back, he pushes the two piles back together and they say, what are you doing? He says, well, what's that third pile over there? They say, well, those are all the rotten ones. He's like, I knew if you were looking at small and big, you'd automatically reject the rotten ones. When we're focusing on things like manhole cover design or retention ponds,
you and see other things,
everything else just kind of gets taken care of too. And you don't do so many dumb things. I don't know. On a slightly different note, this came up in the conversation at the District 4 forum the other day, but it's something that I have asked myself is when we have zoning changes, I see this in Milton and Santa Rosa and Escambia. Walker Wilson said it happens at the planning board all the time. Pensacola, somebody wants to upzone a parcel because they want to do a particular project. So they've got to get an approval to change the zoning. The neighbors come and the commission or the council almost always say something like the following. We like this project, but we're worried that if we approve the zoning change, maybe you don't wind up doing this project and then something else that the zoning allows comes in and the broad category of the zoning would be really inclusive of things we definitely don't want that change the nature of the neighborhood. Why can't we do contingent zoning? Why can't we say the approval is for this project? It's going to upzone for this project or for a duration or for something instead of just well, tough. We got to accept the change and whatever comes with it, even if it's not this one thing we like.
Well, I think we can. I think, or well, we can't. You're right. I think we should.
Because it's spot zoning, yeah. Right? I mean, it's prohibited.
They would call it spot zoning.
Well, we call it something else and get passed.
Form-based code would help.
Okay. Form-based code.
What is that? Tell people what that means.
Well,
Scott, that's you, buddy.
Yeah, it's quite simple, actually. It's just more about intent and use than it is very specific. Thou shalt not have a flower shop here. You know, it's just it's a much more broad and collective look at zoning. It's simple to me. The people who really know the definition are quite disappointed in that explanation.
Yes,
but I would. You'll be getting tested later.
The DPZs of the world, or any master planner is like, well, that was a terrible description. Yeah,
but it's
simple, right? I mean,
yeah.
But it does seem like we get caught in this. Man, we'd love to see the thing you're presenting us with. But right. We don't really want the risk that comes with approving the zoning that we've artificially created a category that we have to allow for if we're going to allow your thing.
Zoning is very, very hard. And most jurisdictions in our area have what's called cumulative zoning, meaning you start the bottom, if you will, is residential. Like hear me out, because you're going to be like, wait, what?
But bottom is residential.
It's good. It's good.
Right. And then what kind of residential? Well, this kind, and then everything residential is in can now be in this all residential, and then everything that residential is in can now be in residential and commercial, mm-hmm. and everything that's in can be in the next step until you get to like nuclear plants, right? Industrial. So you can kind of live anywhere in a zone. It's cumulative zoning. And so it's just depending on the where you are in that chain of hierarchy of how you've accumulated occupancy.
Everything to this point includes everything prior to this
Correct.
Point.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's the way it is both in the city and the county, mm-hmm. and in both counties. So what I see happen often is when people have not in my backyard issues with something.
NIMBY.
All the time.
They are very ignorant to what the code allows the mm-hmm. property to have. Mm-hmm. And so I have on occasion had clients that want to do a project that, you know, we might say is controversial, 50-50. So there might be 50% of the people think this is the greatest thing ever. Yep. I can't get it fast enough. And then there's another half out there like, are you out of your mind? I do not want that around. And the code very much allows it.
Right.
So I wouldn't be bringing anything for
you don't have to request permission.
Correct. It's,
you're allowed.
It's
an
allowed,
entitlement, right?
And we're just. It's typically when it's in a public forum like that, it's because it needs aesthetic approval. I work really, really hard to not bring variances before. Variances are me going before the public forum forever, saying, as a designer, I'm incapable of finding a solution within the rules. May I have an exception right. to the rules?
Hey, and hang on for just a second.
Oh, it's traffic time.
I want to make sure and get traffic in here. I've waited too long already. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I got you. If you're coming in from Gulf Breeze, if you're coming into Pensacola from Gulf Breeze and Navarre, you can expect to see a little bit of a slowdown right before you approach the Naval Live Oaks Nature Preserve. And building up a little bit right before the 3 mile bridge, but clear over the bridge into Pensacola. Seeing a lot of traffic just building up all over downtown Pensacola, so just drive with caution if you're traveling downtown this morning. If you see anything else on the road, please call or text our traffic tip line, 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. All right, back to you, Scott.
So you're saying, hey, as a designer, when I'm asking for a variance, I'm like, I'm incapable of finding a solution within the rules.
Yeah.
I need an exception to the rules. And if you grant me this exception, and every neighbor around in this neighborhood was given the same privilege/exception, would it be okay? Mm-hmm. That's a very hardship to argue.
Agree.
And it often is not. Most of the time, variances are not granted, and I work hard to not ask for them.
Especially given what I think is a very reasonable point, that neighbors buy expecting these limits.
Correct.
And if any of them don't want the limit, they're yes. well within their rights to say,
absolutely.
No, that's why I bought what we've got.
Yep. But occasionally, we get something completely compliant, mm-hmm. no variances required, just need aesthetic approval. And there are a lot of people against the project because they just don't want the project.
Yeah. They use the aesthetic objection because they're against the thing.
Right. And I caution those people, and I see that often. I think there was a developer on Navarre who wanted to bring an RV park to Navarre Beach, right? And everyone, when
they
finally
no,
got
now
to a public
get condos.
Forum, they did. They right, exactly. They're like, well, be careful what you ask for,
right, you get, right.
And they're like, well, no, we really don't want that either. Well, I see that in small neighborhoods as well. I don't want this business. Well, I don't even want the house. The house is too tall. Well, you could. They could easily put something that no one would like.
That's see, right. We solved all the issues.
Yeah.
We solved it all.
Know the occupancies allowed before you complain.
And look at these things before you buy. Look at the surrounding
look at the
area.
Neighboring
look at
properties
who owns
and zoning
what,
classifications.
At, all of that. Because I know
check soils,
people
get
don't.
A realtor before you
hire
buy the property.
There you go. Scott and Jonathan, thanks for the time.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.